they've already, we're assuming they've done the other work. But they've got these figures and don't know what to do with it. This has happened to a lot of people. Will say, I've got them, it's got this rating, it's 15, it's 5, it's 30, whatever this sort of thing is. But then they're going to take horses that don't belong at that level and try to make them match up despite the fact that they shouldn't be in there.
And if you pick the wrong baseline to get those figures off them, you're off.
What to do?
Well, you want to take another step farther, you take a wrong baseline. When you say wrong, you're going to take one that's too good, right?
Probably.
This will teach you one lesson, that even when you take a real good baseline off of a horse that's way below the class level, he won't measure up.
I said that number that B horse there today, I think it's right better than that race the man there.
Oh, I agree. At the right price, that B is a fucking...
If I've gotten you off of focus on this thing, I want to let Jim put you right back on. This may not have anything to do with what he's talking about. It does to me. But take about 10 minutes and discuss it with Jim. I'll leave the room, see.
Yeah, Jim, would you tell us why you put some of these... See you, folks. Except for 2 hours or so Friday night, I haven't been home since Wednesday morning, so I'm well. I'll see you all next month.
Well, a lot of these numbers are really Greek to me. I'm not used to looking at them, and I don't know what the differences in the numbers reflect in terms of beacon lines and things like that. And I would have a hard time using this kind of data to make inferences about the quality rating. I'm not sure it can't be done, and I'm not sure it can be done. So I'm really not certain how to respond to that. But I've given some thought to how you might use these class ratings in combination with the methodologies. And one of the things you might do is just use the basic class ratings as a means of identifying contenders that have already run par or better than par for today's class. That's one application that I think makes sense in using the starting methodology, particularly for people who seem to be having a lot of trouble identifying contenders. Horses that figure to be competitive in today's race. That seems to be a problem a number of starting practitioners are having. So that seems to me to be the most obvious application. One thing, in working with the numbers, if you get a situation where all the horses in the race are below par, and this happens more frequently than you might expect, then I don't think the application really makes any sense. I just discard the data completely in using this method to evaluate horses on class when all the horses in a given field have been rated below par. And I just assume that class will not be an important factor in the outcome of that race, and I look at other factors.
Very good. If everybody is below par. Now, if you put that race on hold, maybe one or two of these horses out of this race that was below par run against a horse or two where you do have a rating. Could you not project your rating, but could you just kind of, if you know that this horse had a rating of this X amount, and now out of this race where everybody was below par, the horse that won that race is only beaten, say, a competitive two lengths. Could you assume that, well, the horse that had this, say, 12 rating, and you look back at this race that you, where everybody was below par, and you say, well, I'm going to make this one a 10.
I really had a hard time following you, I'm sorry, but what I was talking about here was that if one of the ways to use the class ratings that you assign to horses based on their past performance was to look at today's race. You know what the class par should be today just by reading the conditions. $20,000 claiming race, class par is 15. Right. You have prior ratings on horses. One way to identify the contenders is to do include anyone who contended that earned a rating of 15 or high and to exclude horses that had not been able to earn a 15 yet.
Right, but what I'm saying is that if in that particular race, say you have four contenders, right? And now you...
Let's get our terms clear. Four contenders for what?
Four contenders on class.
Okay, they've earned...
They've earned these figures. Okay. Now I'm saying that, let's say, the fifth horse in here is one of these horses that was below par in this particular race that you looked and you said, hey, everybody's below par. But now you know you have some figures on the four horses that have already earned a particular figure. And I'm saying that...
Wait a minute, you're saying four horses have earned par, and now I hear you saying, oh, we're
using more than one race.
No, I'm saying if there is a horse racing against horses that have earned par, and one of the horses that didn't earn the par winds up running a very competitive race to horses that have earned a figure.
Right.
I'm saying, would it be okay the next time that horse, the one that was below par, could you say that, well, if he ran this well to this horse, and I had this one rated at 12,
right.
I'm saying, even though the race before that, he was below par.
Right.
Would it be okay to assume, because he ran a competitive race, say beaten the length and a half, would it be okay to put him in that, assuming that all the four horses that you had ratings for all ran very well? I don't mean, you know, two or three horses stumbled and, you know, there was some spill in the race, and this horse wound up that you had a very...
I'm really sorry, I'm having trouble.
Well, he'd get another...
Can someone restate what he is saying?
He'd get another rating.
I said the four horses run far better and the fifth horse don't.
Okay, so we've got four horses that have earned today's par and one that has not.
Right.
One is not. But that one that didn't, the fifth horse, didn't earn par. This race runs like crazy, the best race he ever run, and does earn par for the next time. Then he was asking that question.
Yeah.
Sure, I'm saying, would it be okay to put a similar number, not as high as maybe the horse that won it, but a similar number for at least the horse that was rated second or third?
Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly. You adjust for the...
Isn't that kind of a projection for...
No, it's just a beat lungs adjustment. That's all it is.
Okay.
That's all it would be. The winner would earn a certain rating, and the horse that you're talking about, even though he was prior below par coming into the race, now he's run a good race, and he was beaten a length and a half or 2 minutes.
Right.
You're going to give him a rating that it's going to be the winner's rating adjusted down by 1 or 2 points because he's only beaten one and a half or 2 minutes.
Now, would it be okay to assume that the horse that ran second and third to that fifth horse that...
Right.
Would it be okay to assume that they are, if they're going into a race where... you project, not project them, but you say, well, here's a horse that ran a very good...
No, I got you now. Okay. The horses that ran second or third to that horse that had didn't have a par...
That just ran the bang-up race to...
No.
No good?
No.
Okay.
That's not a fair assumption.
Okay.
So a horse comes out of a race where he did not earn today's par. There were a few horses behind him. Now, he comes into this race, runs a strong race. Should you move those other horses up?
Right.
No, that's
what
the answer is no. Okay. No, because those horses just have the prior rating, which was a poor rating.
Okay.
Now the horse comes out of the race that also had a poor rating and runs a much improved rating. Should you improve the other horse's rating? The answer is no.
Okay.
It's not fair to assume. Wait until they do it too.
No. Okay.
Wait until they do it too.
Sounds like he's trying to make a key race out of a subpar race.
You're getting at the key race concept. There is a concept called the key race, which tries to get at the class of a race by looking at what happens to the graduates in a particular race. And all they look to see is how many races horses coming out of a particular race won the next time out. If they start to see three or four of them won the next time out, they assume that that was a highly competitive race. That's a different concept altogether than what you're talking about. You're talking about a winner coming out of a race that was poorly rated.
Right.
So it wasn't considered really a contender today.
Before the race.
Right. Before the race, but ran a much improved race, earned a strong rating. Should you adjust the other ratings of the horses that ran behind him in the poor race?
That's what I was thinking.
The answer is no.
Okay. I was thinking about maybe getting a jump on maybe a horse or two that the public didn't think was so good in the wagering this particular time. And since maybe you had, you know, a gauge on another horse.
No,
okay.
Don't do that. You get into a can of worms if you start doing that. There could be all kinds of reasons why that horse improved in these sorts of forms.
Right.
That's probably poor procedure.
Okay. Jim.
I have a question on scenarios. Can I ask it now, or is it out of kill? On a point one, a non-competitive race at any point, the second type of winner, where the winner comes from far behind, the pace setters kill each other off slowly, or the first end just collapses. Not even the pace setters can get the lead. And then a late-running plotter wins by default.
Right.
Then there's a note in your book, and it says, prior to that point, the point being the final fraction, okay, it says the final fraction will be Crawley's slow. Pace prior to that point, the final fraction, can be either fast or slow. But if the final fraction is average to fast, the race deserves better than a one. Mm-hmm. My question is, how much better and how do you arbitrarily decide? How do you decide?
You're asking two difficult questions. Now, you're really trying to get me to take phenomena, which is really difficult to quantify and quantify. You know, and I don't want to resist you, to that extent. But the answer is, I can't do that. That's the answer. I can't do that. It's going to be a one or a two. The time is going to be reflected on the other side of the equation. So you've already got that taken into consideration.
Yes, right. Yeah.
The reason I stated that was because if the final time, in fact, is a little bit faster, that suggests the horse is doing something, you know, other than just coming along in a slow, plodding way and inheriting the lead that just collapsed. So you, instead of giving it a one, you'd probably give it a two.
Well, that's what I assume, because it would be okay to be guided by the times.
Yeah, to some extent be guided by the times.
All right, that's all.
Because the horse was doing something on his own.
Exactly.
He was showing some competitive quality of his own, and so he merits a slightly better rating.
Simple as that. That's good.
That was the whole point of trying to put in that qualifying stake.
That's good. All right.
So he would get a better rating. I mean, the difference between each one of those points on the scale is important in this method. So it's important to take those kind of things into consideration. But the question of how fast should it be, how many lengths should it be, that's not the right way to phrase the question. You know, the concept is much more important. The fact that, you know, the time was fast enough to suggest that his own ability was involved here, and it wasn't just the fact that the race was collapsing, he was coming along in a plodding way, and he gets a two instead of a one, or he gets a one instead of a two.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. The case of individual judgment. Everybody has to decide the way he thinks so, but he might make a mistake. It's everybody will make it different when be given an answer.
The beauty of the whole class of the field is making you do what you're doing right now. Think about this subject. Boy, that's a step tomorrow. Yeah.
Soon we'll be down to class of
good question. On the beaten length adjustment, which is on page 2, you'll notice that I never give a beaten length of adjustment greater than 8. Regardless of how many lengths the horse is. Of course, it was in contention at any point you call, kind of deserves the race of rating. And the beaten length reflects the adjustment downwards that you're going to give a horse, depending on how badly, quote, he was beaten. Sometimes the horse tired contentious with the early calls and collapses, or the jockey just doesn't persevere because he is beaten. He'll be beaten by 10, 13, 15, 20 lengths. It's really a moot point, you know. And the 8 is not arbitrary, but a horse that really was in contention at some point, usually the acceptable guideline is 6 to 8 lengths, something like that. And that's why I use that. So what I recommend at first in doing it is, particularly for people that are having trouble identifying the contenders, let the numbers identify the horses as contenders or not, and use the contenders that have earned a rating of false for better. I was a little bit surprised to see Tom already using it as a separation factor. So he's using it in combination with the start line. And many of you will start to use it that way if it starts to work for you in those ways. What else I wrote down here? I thought about this topic, and the main application that I saw was simply that it would probably be very useful for identifying the contenders in a very, very quick way. I do not like to use horses that have not earned par in a particular field. I just think those horses would usually be beaten, particularly if they're 4-0. And not showing a lot of improvement. The other way to use it, I think, that applies here, since the starting method is paying a lot more attention to exact is, and I know you use the contra energy horse, which I think is an outstanding model for exact betting using this method. But there's no reason I would start using the top two class horses in exact is also whenever they're overlaid with the two pace horses. So you're going to usually betting two horses in this method. One way to play the exact is, at least on paper for a while, to see if it's paying off, is to just combine the two pace selections with the top two class horses. A little bit like the APB check. Use the high APB horse too. The reason for that is that we have an awful lot of evidence suggesting that the high class horses tend to place and show no matter what method you're using. I mean, Scott reported that when he was looking at the horses that had form defects that won anyhow. He reported that it was almost invariably horse with the class. Some of the early data suggested that if a horse had just been entered in a stakes race, he usually moved up dramatically when entered again in an allowance race. It didn't matter how badly he performed in the stakes race. So we have a lot of evidence that horses that have high class ratings, even when they don't win, are often close or in the money. So in exactive betting, I'd be curious to see how the two pace horses that you wind up selecting, when combined with the two high class figures, whenever they're overlaid in exact, just try that. Don't do it with real money at first. Just see how it's working out on paper and then try it.
You said that you don't like to use a horse that hasn't earned par. What if a horse has raced in the last four races? He was second, first, second, and then threw in a real clunker. Would you go back one to pick up his par rating, or would you not?
It would depend on whether I thought the clunker was not representative or it was. If it was, it was below par, and I thought that was the best indicator of his current ability, I'd probably do that.
That kind of question is just impossible.
Well, no, I just thought
you're wasting your time answering and his time answering. Show us a range or something. Because, you know, you say three good races and a clunker, well, we have to look at the rest of the horses.
The reason I ask that is because I have a tendency to go back and use the horse. And maybe I'm wrong.
Go back and just when you don't.
Is there anything in the book that says that?
Jim, can I answer that question?
No, I mean, in the book that everybody has. You can find an example in this. You got one?
Yes.
There must be an example.
Tom has something.
Okay. Yeah. Let me answer that question for you, because Doc knows that that was one of my problems when I started. And here's how I've handled it, and it's working. I compare the clunker, which may not really be a clunker in reality, by his pace figures with the prior race. Okay. So what I do is I put the clunker in first. I run my contenders plus the clunker. If the clunker stays within about the top four, he still might be a contender. And you'll be surprised at how many horses you pick up that pay whopper prices that way.
Yeah.
Now, if he falls way down, he's a 6-5, whatever it is, he's gone off form, at least somewhat. Scott refers to this in his book. He says that even if a horse runs a bad race and it's not representative, it throws his form off. He's not sharp. He's not as sharp as he wants to be. And you're looking for the horse that's really sharp that's going to win today's race. So I use if there's any doubt, use the last pace line. Look at it. I don't care if he's 15 lengths behind. He might have been running against a monstrous pace. Higher class. A lot of different things can affect that. But, I mean, if two of his fractions are pretty close to his prior stuff, he's probably still okay. There might have been a reason why he pulled up. He bled or, you know, whatever those things. Mm-hmm. But that's a good way to do it. Run the clunker first, and then if you still have a doubt, go ahead and run the other race outside of that, and then maybe put the good race in and see how it shapes up. You'd be surprised at how many times the clunker is not really.
Five or six of those races. Well, it's really very difficult to look at even just one horse.
There's a race on page 23.
One other application that I kind of like when I think of. If you have the same horse that has the high class rating and is the first rated horse, the first ranked horse, or whatever criteria you're using to make the pace decision, if those two horses are the same horse, I could think that would be a really strong, that would really enhance the probability of the horse winning. So the pace horse number one, class horse number one, what would happen, let's say, if you doubled the bet when that opportunity came up? I kind of like that application. I would tend to bet more in those kind of situations. Top-rated class horse, top-rated pace horse, same horse. Mm-hmm. That would be another application. Tom was talking, I like, one of the things Tom said today, I like very, very much for Zach today, where he had horses ranked 1, 2, 3, 4. Top-rated horse also had the high class rating, 12 was the number he used. The other three had like a 6, a 5, a 4, I think the par for the race was 9, something like that. And the fourth horse had a 10. So he used the fourth horse in exactly the rating also. And I think that's a good application also. Separating, in other words, separating closely matched second, third, and fourth horses on the basis of one horse having a significantly higher class rating among those three. I kind of like that too. So there are probably a number of applications that make sense in using the two methods. But the one that obviously comes to mind is to use these class ratings as a way of identifying contenders. You can do that within, you should be able to do that within 60 seconds. If you have there at the rates, it should make that job a lot easier.
Is there any software for that?
Yeah, that's what the software would really help you doing, because that software version, I passed out that early software version of this called First Class.
Oh, I see.
And it has a file manager, so it allows you to store a lot of horses along with their updated ratings. And you can call them up to the screen very, very quickly. And it will give you their basic class rating, give you their performance index, and it will give you their rank.
Now to tell me this class ratings, you have to do that. No. Or it's already
you have to put in the input for the horses when you're first rating.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any of the calculations.
Oh, you don't have to, no.
The computer will do all the calculations. Calculations are simple, but at least the computer will do it. It's available for IBM and Apple and Commodore. Those are great.
You can also get the book.
He gives a 30-day guarantee. So get it, look at it. If you don't like it, don't buy it. Send it back. But I think it's very, very well written. It has a few other subroutines that are very, very interesting. It has a variant generator, for example, which allows you to calculate the variant for any given day. Your pars will already be in there. You have a par editor to begin with, which doesn't apply to this group because you all have your own pars. So you can go to that part of the program, erase the pars that are in there, and just write in the pars you want to use. It has that. Then it'll allow you to calculate the variant for any day that you want to calculate the variant. It'll store those variants for 60 days. Whenever you're rating a horse, it will either prompt you for the variant or not, depending on whether it's already stored the variant for that day. Then once you've rated a horse, it will store the horse in the file. And once you have a number of horses rated, you can wind up going to the file again and again. If you don't want to re-rate the horse for any reason, just bring up the latest rating and look at it. If there's 8 horses in the field, you can bring up 8 horses within 30 seconds and look at their latest rating, their PIs, and their rankings, and they'll be right in front of you.
Those pars that are in there, are they just for the Southern Comfort Track, or do you have pars all over?
I'll tell you about the pars that are in there. The pars that are in there are a standardized set par chart based on Quirin's studies of horses all over the country, in which he determined that $10,000 horses ran approximately the same everywhere, whether it was San Anita or River Down. $10,000 horses are $10,000 horses are $10,000 horses anywhere. And he also discovered what the standard adjustments were between the various class levels. So if you know the pars for $10,000 horses, presumably anywhere, you can construct a par chart which has some application anywhere.
There's a lot of error in that part. It's just one expedient way of, for people who don't have cars, which is 97% of the horse players in this country, to use a method that requires you to have cars. It doesn't apply to you, because you've got much better cars, much more accurate, updated cars for local tracks here. So in your case, you would go to the car editor in the program and just erase the cars that are there. It's very simple, just by you just write over the cars, it writes in the new cars.
Or you could use the cars for any other part of the country that you didn't have.
That's right. That's right. You could use those cars for any other part of the country that you don't have. That's not the best way to operate. It's just an expedient way for you to use the method in areas where you don't have up-to-date accurate cars. And you have no other way of getting it.
What language is that written?
I guess it's basic.
Basic.
Sounds like it could be a V-base or something, too.
I think it's programmed very well. I'm unsophisticated with programming. Vic probably knows the programmer better than I do. But it doesn't matter. It'll be locked in.
I know, but it matters if you're going to go make changes to it.
You won't be able to get in and make changes.
I thought he said you could go change the cars.
No, you can change
the cars, but most of the stuff that Mitchell writes now, you'll find it.
It'll be compiled, so you won't be able to break into a listing.
You can enter data. It's a change.
You can copy them. The floppy disks and leave it.
I know what you
take another floppy disk and erase and
no,
your
you know, you tell on one of us, we'll tell on you. don't tell people how to break people's clothes. He's getting a royalty for God's sake.
One of the things I might try to do is starting next Sanita, I'm not giving you this, it's not a commitment or anything, but one of the things I'd like to do is start to accumulate the class ratings for older horses, not only on this circuit, but for all the sister circuits, like the Northern California Circuit and Long Beach. Those three circuits that feed into one another all year long. And then for any of the users, we provide like a service twice a year, maybe three times a year, where we send out all the updated class ratings that we have with the PIs and the rankings. And we try to organize a small team of handicappers to kind of do that. And that would be a nice service. Because otherwise, you're not out the track every day, you're not going to have ratings on all the horses, so you're going to miss a lot of data.
Yeah.
And we can provide that.
It's the best, that's the service that is missing.
Yeah, that sure is. That's hard to do. But that's really all those three applications seem to me the ones that really come to mind about how this might be used in tandem with the start back.
Wouldn't you need to update that so every time the horse runs?
Yes and no. You know, where you get the claiming horse that is running very similar numbers and you're satisfied that the PI is a good predictor of what he's going to earn today, you don't need to update all the time. You know, you can just use the PI multiplied by today's classifier, and that's your best prediction of what the rating should be. Plus, but the program will give you, part of the output will be the latest class rating that you entered, regardless of when you entered it. If you entered it 2 weeks ago, it'll give you that. If you entered it 6 months ago, it'll give you that, along with the PI and the ranking.
If it only gives you the most recent update of the rating, you won't be able to do these averaging techniques that you have.
It averages them for you based on what you put in. Based on what you put in.
Thank
you. There's one change in the RC rating in the software version and from the book version. In the book version, I suggested looking at the last six races, taking the two best rankings and averaging them. And I decided, since that application was mainly for non-claiming horses, and the group of horses I was most concerned about are the three-year-olds, which I think are really difficult to get a grip on. The software version only takes the best ranking of the last six. Whether it was the latest or four or five races back, and provides that rank. Just takes one rank. There's no averaging. There's still the averaging on the PI, but not on the relative class.
But is it already? Since you have that, it's already. You can buy that thing. Or it's in the future.
You got that? Did you get a flyer?
Yes.
Yeah, I got. Yeah. But you know, sometimes you send a flyer.
This
and
is not me. I have a yeah. This is a reliable source.
Sorry, it's not made yet. It's after another 3 or 4 months and you will be able.
I guess the way software, computer software, people market these products. And the IBM version was available as early as April, but the Apple version.
I didn't receive any.
Well, the Apple version was not available for about 30 days after that. And then the programmer was facing his final exams, so the Commodore version was not available until about mid-June. And the whole set of programs was not available until about July 4th. Oh. It is available now.
Okay.
He wouldn't sell the IBM version until he had the other for some reason.
Oh, I guess
people get mad to do that.
Yeah. This is a, if you pay attention, you read that and you follow, whether you do it correctly or incorrectly is up to you.
Yeah.
No, you've got to do it. But if you do it, if you start thinking about it, it really is going to help you. Because it's going to help you pinpoint whether you go through all those complex things I was playing with. Is it material?